Means Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is March 25th. Welcome to the committee hearing today. It's a public hearing, Senate Bill 5526, Oregon Health Authority. Ms. Ames, would you please begin and just tell us what we're hearing today?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, so today will be all, the whole time will be for public testimony. Based on the number of people we have signed up, we're asking people to limit their testimony to about 3 minutes. I have a clock to scare you. And the clock looks green for a while, and then it flashes green, and then the last 30 seconds it turns yellow, and then it turns red, and that means stop.
Thank you. First, we're going to hear from Senate President Courtney and Representative Hoyle, Senator Gilser, and Sheriff Myers. So please come on up.
Just go.
See, you know, Madam Chair, the only reason the Senate President does that is because he wants easy access.
He's the smartest guy on the panel.
I believe we should start at the right and move to the left because, well, I always think we should start at the right and move to the left. Mr. President,
we're a very serious group.
Good morning.
Can I go first?
Yeah.
Chair Nathanson and Chair Bates and members of the committee. My name is Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator from District 11, which includes portions of Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn, and I live up here on. What are you doing? Taking a picture of me?
I am.
Senator Steiner, now we have to give him more seconds.
2925 Island View Drive, Northeast, Representative Stark. And I want to thank the women for coming back from their sleepover at Mahonia Hall. Didn't get invited, Senator Bates, about how you feel, Representative Olson, Representative Stark, but it was a sleepover at Mahonia Hall last night for all women legislators, lobbyists, agency heads. So that must have been a thrill. Last session, now I'm going to talk on mental health, which I don't know a lot about. Let's just say it up front, because I know there's very highly skilled people on this. I stumbled into this issue in 2004, but because you got me on the clock, I can't really tell you how I feel about life. So I'll just quickly read my very large print statement on big pages, which is a double statement by my staff, which is very, do you know what it's like to read testimony in pages this big and this staff, how it make you feel? My staff does that to me so I can at least read the words. So we're looking for Representative Steiner Hayward, as you always keep your eye down when people are testifying, never make eye contact. We're looking for $60 million to help people with addiction and mental illness. Now, these investments are in addition to the investments that we made 2 years ago, which I have here in plastic. I had it done in plastic because I got to constantly remind myself of the plethora of programs that were created for adults and young people by this committee, the full Ways and Means Committee, and the policy committees in our attempt to break out in the area of mental health as no other state has. We're more than the state hospital. We're more than Junction City, which the keynote speaker of which is sitting beside me here today or one over from me, the majority leader, the Honorable Representative Val Hoyle. We're much more than that. Basically, the money that we're talking about, some of it's going to go to ESA and some of it's going to go to crisis services. And I'm just going to now put my paper down because I don't like to read speeches, as some of you know. I don't like to read from text. And there are people here, the chair of the policy committee on mental health is here, Senator Gelser. But most importantly is an individual here who has mixed emotions about me, and his name is Jason Myers, the sheriff of Marin County. And what I didn't know is that unsolicited, he wanted to be here to talk about what we did 2 years ago, allowing our law enforcement people, God forbid, when they go out and get themselves in a crisis situation, to be able to have immediate assistance so when the use of deadly force is either inhibited or not used in a way that should not be used. But the tragedy is, and then I'm going to transition out of here, is that Marin County is doing an extraordinary job in that area but it only exists in 18 counties on a measured basis, not as much as Marion. And so there's 18 more counties it doesn't exist in. So I am led to believe that the $60 million, and I'm not going to, I could read the different programs, but you know that. You know these programs. It's in front of you. You'll make that decision. Actually, the $60 million was, it's the 90-some million we need. The problem with the $90 million is it's fluctuating on me. It was $129 million. It's down to 90. Most of it's housing. But it includes some programs you might want to look at. Now, I know that there's some strong feelings in this committee about CCOs, about pilot programs. Counties say, give us all the money. The one thing I've learned in mental health that makes me very sad, now this is going to be spontaneous. I don't know if I wish I'd ever gotten into the area the way I have, which I stumbled into, as I told Senator Bates and others, when I and Karen Minnis and the Speaker found the Cremains out there in 2004. And I always approach mental health the way, like, just approve the budget. The tragedy is I had no idea of all the different turfs involved, all the different players involved, and how strongly they feel. And so to this day, I'm confused as the best plan or the best approach or the best structure. I just know there is a ton of people and a ton of structures and a ton of places that say they want to how to do this and should be done a certain way. And I do think some of the things that we started 2 years ago are working. I believe that because I've been told by certified smart people. They're here to talk. Are all of them? I don't know. Is there a better way? I don't know. Is this money I'm asking for justified? I believe it's justified. I believe these programs need the money. So it's an honor and a privilege to testify in front of you. I do not like to go before Ways and Means Committees. Ways and Means Committees scare me to death. I don't do well in front of them. I am a policy committee guy. So it was all I could do to come here today. I was going to come, not going to come, because when you deal with me in numbers, I don't deal with numbers. I deal with humans. I don't deal with numbers. I'm not saying you don't deal with humans. I didn't say, Representative Stock, you don't care about people. Don't get on me. I'm just saying this is an unnatural act for me to be here talking to a red light, digital red light. And so with that, I'm here. I believe this money is important. I asked you to consider it. I asked you to use your individual collective judgment. And I got to tell you, you notice how I'm sitting with on the side here, besides those individuals who truly are the juggernauts. These are three juggernauts in mental health. I'm a weenie. They're juggernauts. And so with that, I'll be still and let them testify and take some, maybe one of your questions. Hello? I mean, you just sit there looking at you. I don't know what the question now. You just do something.
Senator Bates.
I only got one question for you, Mr. President. Would you like to leave?
That hurts, huh? That hurts. And you're a doctor. You're supposed to heal.
Senator Gelser, did you want to go next?
I think so. Chair Nathanson, Chair Bates, and members of the committee, for your record, I'm Sarah Gelser, State Senator from Albany and Corvallis. I wanted to talk a little bit about the people. These are important investments, and reshaping our mental health system over the course of the next year or two is absolutely critical. We have a system that is filled with good people with great intentions, but it's fragmented. And that fragmentation means that we are losing people and people aren't getting the help that they need. So I wanted to share two recent stories from the district that Representative Olson and I share that have been brought to me. One was just within the last couple of weeks. There was an individual addicted to drugs and alcohol, sometimes violent, became suicidal, had been thinking about harming himself for over a week, disclosed to his wife that he was afraid that he might harm himself or her or their children, and asked that he be taken to the emergency room. She took him to the emergency room. He got to the emergency room. He informed the emergency room personnel of the same, that he had been fantasizing about killing himself and possibly harming others. The response from the hospital was that I mentioned that he's drug and alcohol addicted, that his blood alcohol level was over the legal limit, and therefore there was nothing they could do to help him, so they sent him home. They did not keep him in the hospital. They did not connect him up with mental health resources. And in the car, one of the family members reported that he said, I could just go home now and kill all of us, and maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. Last year, we had a young woman who disclosed to her family, this teenager, that she was suicidal. She wanted to die. She wanted to take her own life. She told her family she was going to put herself in front of a train and take her life. The family asked for help. They couldn't get her in to anyone. They expressed the level of crisis, and she was urged to call law enforcement. The parents were urged to call law enforcement if they were that concerned. The family did call law enforcement. Law enforcement came, took the young person to the hospital. The hospital assessed her, agreed that she was in danger, that she was suicidal, but there were no resources available to her, so they gave her a sleeping pill. They sent her home and suggested that she get services. The wait was several weeks long. The next weekend, this young woman slipped out of her house in the night, put herself in front of a train, and took her life. We could have done better. Our system needs to be fixed. Part of that is our key investments that we do know are working. I think Sheriff Myers is going to talk about the importance of the crisis units. But part of it is getting out there and really talking to the people that are experiencing this, the family members, the clients themselves, the direct support professionals that are working on the front lines. If they are to come in and listen to the presentations that we all give about how our system is structured, they would not recognize that system. It's not the way that they experience it. We have to, we really have to address that. And there's an urgency to it. I appreciate that we are at a time when many people are wanting to have this conversation. We're currently in conversations with some nonprofit partners to be able to fund some part of this work, to be able to get there out there into the communities, to really talk to people and come back with some strategies that can work. It might not be the same strategy in every community. All of our communities are different. But I'm grateful for your commitment, for the Senate President's leadership, and I just hope that we can work to pull this system together in a way that actually works for people like the people that I just described. We shouldn't lose another kid or another adult because our system wasn't ready to serve them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairs Nathanson, Bates, Senator Bates, and members of the committee. My name is Val Hoyle. I represent House District 14, West Eugene, and Junction City. And as the Senate President mentioned, when I came in, I worked very closely with him and other people here to ensure that the Junction City State Hospital was built so that we could build a hospital that actually reflected the kind of treatment methods that we have now. I have a brother who suffers from schizophrenia, and I wanted a place that when he gets sick enough and he ends up in a hospital, that I would feel comfortable that he would get the kind of treatment that treated him like a person, like someone who has an illness. But the hospital is incredibly expensive. So this is a Ways and Means Committee, and we want to talk about using our dollars in the most effective and efficient way possible. And the way to do that is by investing in community mental health services. So I worked incredibly hard to get that hospital so that we could shut down the other two hospitals and give people acute hospital-level care. But I also said that I would be as committed in working with my colleagues here in ensuring that we have community mental health care. The ESA program that the Senate President spoke to is early intervention for people when they have their first psychotic break. When someone is schizophrenic, if they can have early intervention, the likelihood that they won't end up in a hospital-level facility, the likelihood that they will be able to manage their chronic disease is high. And never mind the untold human cost. Every time someone has a psychotic break, you know, as a family member, it's like a macabre version of Groundhog Day. Is time after time after time you see the person that you love just slipping away, and each time someone has a psychotic break, it takes more and more of that person that they are. It's a horrible disease, but we treat people with other diseases, with chronic diseases, in a way with compassion and with care. And just like Senator Gelser, I got a call from a parent that I have worked with over the past year, and she said, "You know, my husband and two children were driving over a bridge. You know, they had taken the day off and they were spending time together." She said, "Last year at this time, my son was hearing voices, was psychotic, was wanting to jump off that bridge to kill himself." And she said, "And I couldn't get help." And she couldn't get help because this young man who was 16. had tested drug positive. And so when you test drug positive, and you know what people who suffer from mental illness do? They self-medicate. So the fact that someone shows up positive for alcohol and drugs does not mean that they should be treated differently or that they don't suffer from mental illness. But yet we have a siloed system. So she said, the difference is that you helped us get access to community mental health care. You helped us get access because I knew a lobbyist that I could call to say, this is a kid that really needs to get help. Because of that, he had tried multiple times to commit suicide. He's in a program. He's back in school. He's caught up on his credits. This is a life that we saved, but we also saved money. He didn't end up in the prison system because we shouldn't put people in prison because they suffer from an illness. That isn't the appropriate place for treatment. The bottom line is, if we can invest in this program, we can save money in public safety, we can save money by not putting people in higher cost facilities, and more importantly, we can save lives. So I know that I don't envy your task in deciding how you will invest our scarce dollars, but these investments will pay dividends across every other budget and in people's lives. So I encourage you to do so.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Jason Myers. I'm the Marion County Sheriff. It's a privilege to be here today speaking to you. I'm going to talk about the good work that's been done with the prior investments from 2013. As you know, our county has had a long working relationship of collaboration between law enforcement, the courts, the district attorney, county commissioners, our health department, and we've really targeted our work at working at diverting people out who are suffering from a mental health crisis or a mental health condition out of the criminal justice system. And we've made small gains over the years in terms of training law enforcement, training others in crisis intervention training, and putting clinicians in our jail to help with transition. But we reached a point where we were ready to take the next step, and that was to add mobile crisis, to have a trained law enforcement official with a clinician in a car responding to crises at the time that they were occurring. There was not enough funding locally to be able to do that. And well, it was a dream of ours to go there to divert at the front end of the system, and we had kind of built up the resources to be able to do that. We didn't have the funding to do that. This funding that came through in the investments allowed us that opportunity, and we launched Mobile Crisis with a Salem police officer and a clinician and a deputy sheriff and a clinician to respond countywide to crises during peak hours. And the results have been absolutely phenomenal. During the last year, our two mobile crisis teams encountered 455 individuals in the community who were in acute crisis. That is a call that comes into 911 saying somebody is injuring somebody, somebody is suicidal. And in these contacts, we've been managed to de-escalate a number of situations, and we have lots of anecdotal stories that could have turned out with somebody being arrested or a use of force situation, and we're able to de-escalate those situations and then turn the person over to care, to a place where they can get help for their conditions in the community and be supported. We had, of these 455 contacts, only 22 people went to jail, and half of those people, it was because they had an outstanding warrant. I mean, that's amazing. In these kind of contacts, most of those individuals would end up in the criminal justice system not getting the help they need. So that is really good news. We've also seen that about, on average, over the last 3 years, our jail bookings have been down by 5,000 individuals. We reached a height in 2007 at about 19,000 people that came through our jail. We're down to about the 15,000 range, and it's going lower each year, which is really good news. We've also seen that the state hospital admissions for our county for aid and assist for the misdemeanor population is down by 43%. That's huge. I think it's an average of about 2 people per month or 24 people over the year, and you can do the math on how much that saves. More importantly, though, we're getting people the help that they need in the community, and they don't go to our jail or our criminal justice system where they actually deteriorate. They get worse. They lose their life skills, and we've seen that. And I think these investments, they're good for our community. They're certainly good for the individual. They're good for the public safety system. I'd like to close. I see the red light there, and I don't want to run a red light, especially in front of all of you. I'd like to close here.
Good.
I'd like to thank Senator Courtney for his leadership and his vision. And I'd like to thank all of you for that leadership and vision as well. And I know that you have difficult decisions, but any funding we can put in this area, we will show you a good result in our communities. And we'll treat people the way that we should be treating them. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff, and colleagues. We're very pleased that you could take time out of your day to come talk to us. We have a lot of other people who are going to follow your words with their own take on the system and probably specific ideas they have, but certainly all appeals along the same lines. I hope that's the testimony that will support all of the words that you've started us out with this morning. Panel, do you have any questions for these colleagues or the sheriff?
Yes. Just a quick one to any member of the panel here, except the sheriff, nothing personal. We have a hodgepodge system across the state, and when we came into the session, we tried to get a group together that would be similar to what we did for CCOs, where we had a hodgepodge system for physical health, dental health. That process was successful and has produced something no other state has with the CCOs. Wanted to do the same thing with mental health. We couldn't come to consensus of getting that done. A lot of reasons for that, including losing governor. So what I'm asking here is we're going to, in ways and means, going to have to make some tough decisions about how to spend this money with pilot programs as broadly based as we can. And I'm hoping that you will join us in the next session, whether it be February or later, and having a broad-based discussion about spreading programs across state that have some uniformity to them, so that no matter where you enter the system, the state of Oregon, you actually get the same basic good treatment. The stories that I've heard about two patients going to ERs, depends which ER you went to. There are many ERs you would have kept there, been sent to a mental health facility, and got into the system, and many you just get dumped out. Or you get taken care of for a few days, and you go out the back door and recycle through, and the sheriff has seen that too. So all I'm asking is, anyone who want to step up and say, yes, we will come together as a group to look at this statewide, not just piece by piece by piece, which we're going to have to do in this session, because we have not formed that process.
Senator Bates, we are in the process of forming that process. There is a group that is coming together. We are working with the hospital system. We're working with AMH. We're working with the governor's office. We're working with legislators. We're working with advocates and NAMI and others. The idea is that this group will be having this conversation over the course of the next several months, prepared to come back in the February session with recommendations that are very comprehensive and move beyond just the mental health system. One of the challenges that I think we have in this fragmented system is we look at it as primarily a medical problem. We look at managing people in hospitals and prisons and how do they take their medication. We need to be looking more broadly at that piece, but also how are we supporting people for employment and housing, their criminal justice needs, their economic needs, their family support needs. And that is the group that's coming together. As I mentioned, we are working on finding some nonprofit partners that can provide a facilitator that was similar to what was done through the CCO, and we look forward to engaging a lot of people in the process. I imagine hundreds of people will be part of this process by the time we get through it this fall.
Senator Gelser, thank you for that response. I'm pleased to hear that it's a broader examination of what needs to be done, not only within the confines of the health care or health and human services area. Very pleased to hear that. You would not have necessarily been listening to our hearing a week ago when the director of OHA testified in our committee and explained that the health authority itself is initiating a broad look at this. Of course, that will be, again, within just their silo, so I'm pleased that you're recognizing these other connections that need to be made. But I was very encouraged to hear that OHA is taking a new look at how to approach this system-wide. So I hope those efforts are not happening outside of each other's sphere of awareness, because you'll do much better when people can pool their resources and deliver a new package and a better system, and that we don't have ideas where people might be spinning their wheels on the outside of the real kernel that needs to be addressed.
And Chair Nathanson, if I may respond, yes, I've been in direct conversation with Lynn, and the conversation really needs to be around a single table. We need to stop having dozens of different conversations and have a single one. I know that OHSU has also talked about doing a broad look. I was really appreciative of the director of OHA who redirected them back into this conversation as well.
Terrific. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. My question actually is for Sheriff Myers. You know, listening to the stories that Senator Gelser and Representative Hoyle told about the challenges when you have people who are self-medicating with drugs or alcohol, I wonder how your program has managed to navigate that challenge, because I would have to imagine the significant percentage of the people that your officers and teams run into have been doing just that. So could you talk about your experience with that, please, sir?
Sure, co-chairs, Senator Steiner Hayward, that's an excellent question. And what we've really done is we have the hub of our system is a psychiatric crisis center that we can take people to. It's on the grounds of the hospital. It's not a hospital level of care, but it's at that point that they can assess the individual, because each person's conditions, each person's circumstances are different. And so they're able to take a look at those situations and determine what actually is the problem with the individual. Is it detox that they need, or is it mental health and detox? And so they do that at that psychiatric crisis center. They pair them up with a caseworker and then address their individual concerns. So it's not a cookie cutter program that we just place everybody in. I mean, we actually individually look at each person and then wrap those services that will benefit them around them.
Thank you, Sheriff.
And just Chair Nathanson and Senator Bates, Chair Bates, to speak to what you've said, Senator Bates, we, Chair Nathanson and I, had gotten contacted about a woman who was psychotic, and it was freezing out, and she wouldn't leave her tent, and, you know, worked hard to make sure that she got treatment, but because she had shown up drug positive, even though she was actively psychotic, couldn't be put on a mental health hold. But we were told when, you know, her case was discussed in various groups that get together, had she been in Multnomah County or had she been in Marion County, she would have easily qualified for a mental health hold. And it was everything that we could do to make sure that she didn't freeze to death because she was afraid to go inside a building because she thought she would be attacked. The bottom line is that person had someone of the caliber of, you know, Chair Nathanson and myself to be their voice. But there are so many people that don't. And just because you happen to get sick in a different county or a different place, you shouldn't have different treatment. So I think what you said is absolutely spot on, and is something that we need to look at, having those, recognizing the difference in rural and urban resources, but also understanding that there should be the same criteria across our state, and the CCO model is an excellent one to look at.
Just add a note that I could, not necessarily even urban or rural. I've asked people to move from Jackson to Josephine County to get the mental health treatment they needed, because it's not available in Jackson, but it is in Josephine.
Right. It's crazy. Just so, Chair Leeson, Senator Bates, you and I, Senator Bates, since you brought it up, I've had some very strong conversations about your dissatisfaction, your unhappiness with, quote unquote, the mental health system. In that meeting, Representative Nathan was also there. I've had other meetings like that. Senator Cruz approached me on the floor, on the podium the other day, or actually on the floor, saying, I want it, this group has to be formed. I don't like task force at all. I like joint committees, because I think legislators should be embedded in the process all the way along the line. And so I do not like task force. Having said that, I always capitulate. To me, task force, everybody wants a task force. I do not like them. We have a committee structure. We have an interim, which is becoming very active. I believe a major joint committee is a much better way to go. You can always subcommittee out of an interim committee with two legislators and then somebody certified smart. That's my approach. That's just the structure. But I'm not in charge of this. But this I do want to say. Since I stumbled into this in 2004 with no background, my background is history English, speech, and political science. I don't know the first thing about psychiatry. I don't know anything about this. I sometimes regret doing it because I've now concluded that no matter that this group is necessary, but I want to make sure that we don't overpromise. I do not believe it's possible, regardless of who you put in the rooms in terms of the advocacy, you're going to get everybody to agree in the end. I am now convinced if you could get 70%, that's an arbitrary figure, maybe you get lucky and you go 75, then you better run with it. Because I'm not going to use the words I use to describe the players, the territories, and the fighting going on in mental health to the point that I go crazy. I go crazy. Where is the patient in all this? And so, yes, let's go back at it and work hard. But I am convinced that I don't understand it. I'm 71 years old. Maybe I'm too old. But there's something in this world of mental health, and we are breaking out. I believe our state is breaking out, Senator Bates. I think it broke out with the state New York State Hospital. We broke out. We are starting to move ahead of other states, and we're struggling, but we're not afraid to take a chance. But I am now concluding that we can put together this work group. We should put together a work group, get ready to go. But I don't think you're ever going to get, and we could list all the players and all the names, and there is a ton of certified, smart, I know what's best out there. I do not believe you're going to get them all to agree in the end. So there are going to be some tough decisions to make, and there's going to be choices to make. So I want that on the record, and you can push back, but that's just, and you might say, well, you're negative, Peter. You know, you're an Irishman. You never celebrate. Your glass is not only half full, you don't even have a glass. I'll accept all that. I'll take all those criticisms. But that's what my tummy is telling me, and I think it's a tragedy. I think it's sad. But I'm at least happy that we're making some progress, that you take, that we got a chance to keep going, but I also want to be realistic about getting everybody happy at the end.
Thank you all for being here. Representative Boone.
I have a question for you.
Representative Boone would like to say
something.
Trying to
get you out of here.
I thought it was over too, but Representative Boone.
Well, I did. I put my finger up a while ago. Anyway, I want to say that my first encounter with this issue was personal, but first encounter legislatively was with Senator Courtney, and when he so boldly drafted, and thank you again, Senator, Senate Bill 1 at the time was the mental health parity bill, and I was privileged to be able to carry it on the House floor, but then served in Human Services Policy Committee, and I'm with you, Senator. I'm a policy person. I don't like math. Numbers scare me, too. I try to surround myself with certified smart people who can work a calculator quickly. But all of you have been up there, and I'm sure everybody in the audience too, but we have great leadership in this area in our midst, and we're kind of compressed into this small time period, and we're handling real lives, real people, real lives, and I really like what you say, and I hope that we take your human approach to that, you know, and let the numbers people do their magic with the budgets and everything and balancing it out. There's never going to be enough money. There's never going to be enough to, we are never going to get to the end of that line. But if we can help a lot of people have a life, I think that's what's really important. And it really helps me to hear you say what you're saying and your anecdotal stories, and you guys are in the trenches. Because all we have otherwise is what we read in the papers and hear on the news, and they're usually at the bad end of the thing. So thank you, and don't give up, Senator. You're not too old.
Representative Nathanson, Chair Nathanson, and
wow.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson and Chair Bates, I just want to say something, Representative Boone. His name is Len Hanna. I miss him terribly. With all due respect, you know, I love to get attention. Senator Bill, when I'm feeling good all over, that's the one time I've felt good since I've been here. Representative Stark, and your look is not making me feel any better. But I want to say this. Len Hannon, you talk about mental health parity, it's Len Hannon. I'm sorry.
Right.
I miss him. I can almost get emotional. I miss him terribly. He's a Republican. I miss him terribly. And so you want to give me credit for mental health, I was just a foot soldier. It's Len Hannon. Len, are you listening, baby? And his widow's listening. I'm telling you, Len Hannon. He's the big juggernaut in that. So I just want to say that for the record.
And I think the one thing that Senator Courtney has said, I've heard him say over and over again, is there's not one person he's met, and because, you know, he is, I don't know how to say it without he is more senior than some of the rest of us at this this table. He's met a lot more people, and he said, "I've never met one person who did not have a family member or someone they knew or a loved one that suffered from mental illness. We all have somebody." Mm-hmm. So this is about touching every single person that we come across, because it affects us all, and this is about spending money efficiently at the right time, in the best way, and I too appreciate the Senator's leadership.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
I just need to apologize to the good Senate President for being late, but I was up in another
President
committee.
Courtney, apparently we need you back at the table.
Let the poor man go.
can I say something? No, this is gonna. This is over. I'm done. This tie is an elephant tie.
Is that the one I gave you?
You know who gave me this tie?
Probably
Senator Jackie Winters gave me this tie. An elephant tie. I wore an elephant tie here, Representatives. You got that? So I just want everybody to know, I got a bipartisan tie on my body.
And that's because the good president knows that this issue is bipartisan.
Mm-hmm. That's the point. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I didn't say, that's very good. That's right, because I'm getting a little irritated about this part. That's very good. Say that again, please, for me. Just
now, this issue is bipartisan.
All right, now I'm feeling good.
This is not about a D or an R.
Well, you heard it there. Pay attention, Representative Stark. Listen. Listen up, buddy.
Wow.
Can I go now?
You know,
I gotta go.
I was hoping that you would stay to listen to the rest
no,
of the
No, I gotta go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's TMI.
I was up on Bill's domestic violence.
I'm looking at the list of people who have asked to testify. Violence. There are more of you than we can fit in at 3 minutes each. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to ask our timekeeper to change the time to 2 minutes each. If a few of you, excuse me. Thank you. If you could keep it to 2 minutes, if you go a few seconds over, it'll still work out all right, but we can't let everybody take the full 3 minutes, or the last few people are going to drop off the list entirely. And I apologize for that.
And Madam Chair, I am going to have to step out a couple minutes to go to speak. So
we're
started.
Going to start with the first panel of Tamara, Linda, and Michael. Please come up. And after that, it will be Rick, Royce, and Marie. Please start immediately. Don't wait for everyone to sit down. That way we can get more people in and hear more words. Whoever wants to go first should
All right.
start.
I'll get started. Co-chairs Nathanson and Bates and members of the committee, my name is Tamara Sale, and I'm the director of the Early Assessment and Support Alliance, or EASA, Center for Excellence at Portland State University. Last year, EASA served 547 young people who were confronting psychosis for the first time. 83 additional young people and their families are in services so far as a result of the most recent new investments in EASA. Without a program like EASA, psychosis is life-threatening and leads rapidly to family trauma and long-term disability. With EASA, we found that families stay together, and the majority of young people stay out of the hospital and continue in school or work. A bipartisan Congress recognized the significance of early psychosis intervention in 2014 and mandated that all states begin to develop programs. Oregon's EASA program has been identified by the federal government as a national model. All the remaining parts of Oregon, except four counties, applied for the EASA new investment funding and have started programs. Clackamas, Douglas, and Lane came on in spring of 2014, and Klamath, Jackson, and Josephine began accepting people in late summer and early fall. An Eastern Oregon coalition hired a full-time EASA coordinator and assigned local clinicians who are developing a rural version of EASA. We're seeking ways to get EASA going in the remaining four counties, building on momentum in other areas. you know, ESA is a holistic program. We serve folks who are using alcohol and drugs. We try to address their comprehensive needs and to provide a gradual long-term transition. And we also try to encourage people to participate in ongoing decision-making and system development. And one of our most exciting developments over time has been our Young Adult Leadership Council. We have a couple of the members of that here. They're looking at things like housing policy, what the long-term needs are of these folks, and the ESA programs are starting to work really closely with the new hubs as well to look at developing the kinds of transitional supports that we need to sustain. We're also looking at trying to bring in more private insurance reimbursement, leverage our existing dollars to expand on the investment that's already been made. And I really want to thank you all for your commitment and your support over time. It's made a tremendous difference. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hi, my name is Linda Ringo, and I'm a resident of Salem-Keizer area. And 2 years ago, my daughter, who was 19 years old, fresh out of high school basically, first year in college, experienced a mental health crisis, and she was hospitalized the first time 2 weeks in the Salem psychiatric unit. And it was at that time that my family had been introduced to ESA. They reached out to us. Had they not done that, I don't know what we would have done, because we weren't prepared for a young adult to have a mental health crisis. We'd never experienced anything like that before. And Dr. Wolf and his team reached out to us, and we were able to have tools and resources at our hand. The second time that summer of 2013, she was hospitalized for 8 weeks. And once again, you know, we were at that time just hungry to know how to help, how to heal. And her siblings, she has three siblings, all young adults as well, and myself and her father, we went to family group and statewide conference, and that's where I was empowered by other mothers of young adults who are experiencing this. Mental health crisis has no prejudice. It has no bias. It hits anyone and everyone, and you don't have to have, my daughter was not under the influence of alcohol or drugs when it hit. It hit. And all I can tell you as a parent who's experiencing this and seeing her child go through this, we need programs. We need programs to help us cope and help us give the tools and resources to them as well. I'm also an educator, and it's helped me understand the young adults that I serve in the community and some of the issues that I've seen them face. I have a better understanding of mental health, and I'm just telling you, I'm so grateful for these programs. Thank you.
Co-chairs Nathanson, Bates, and members of the committee. My name is Michael Haynes. I'm a graduate of the ESA program and also serve on the Young Adult Leadership Council. ESA saved my life, literally. I wandered through life about a year and a half prior to entering the program in complete despair. I was hurtling rapidly in a downward spiral full of fear, depression, paranoia, anxiety, self-loathing. I was completely alone, losing a battle no one understood, and I hated myself for it. When I first experienced my psychosis, my mother was very, of course, concerned. We went to the hospital, and as you know, it's not a quick process, and what happened is that they turned me away. Imagine being in your biggest crisis of your life and being told that you can't be helped. So after I went to another hospital, I was introduced to ESA. I'm sorry, but I didn't expect this to happen. I now work as a peer support specialist for the ESA Young Adult Hub programs, and it's amazing. The Hub program is as great of a program as ESA. It's designed mainly to give young adults a chance, who by standards don't have much of a chance anymore. Yeah, it's for young adults that are at barriers to other mental health services, or may have flunked out from other providers. Yeah. These are people that have been given up on and are just expected to spend a lifetime in the system. And I have the opportunity to see firsthand how great the Young Adult Hub is and how grateful the participants and families are for such an opportunity. I know that Oregon has been a leader in mental health services, pushing boundaries and paving ways for other states. They look to us because we have these great programs that have helped not only save lives like my own, but for many other folks as well. And I just want to thank you for helping make this a possibility through your commitment to families and making Oregon such a great state. I am proud to be a part of that and honored to testify. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us today. You have such well-prepared testimony. You have such a powerful message that you've just delivered. We appreciate your being here. If your words are written and you wouldn't mind sharing them with us and making them available publicly, please let us know so that they could be part of the record.
I don't have them currently, but can I send them in?
Oh, that would be just fine. Okay. We wouldn't mind doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. Thank you all. Next is Rick Royce and Marie. And whoever gets seated first can start right away. Just remember to state your name for the record. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Rick Plevin. I'm the president of Oregon Prevention Education and Recovery Association and the executive director of Best Care Treatment Services. And Chair Nathanson and Chair Bates and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify. I do have an executive summary of my testimony. It's right here. Penny pound. I urge the members of the committee to support Senator Courtney's investment in addiction services. Make a penny's investment, and you'll get a pound of return. So I can give an example. In Central Oregon, working with our CCO, Office of Source, they've given me a great opportunity with residential treatment services. And so we've been able to provide an outcomes-driven system that has focused on follow-up care. And what we've been able to do is it's very outcomes-driven, very data-heavy. And it has allowed us to do is provide supported housing, recovery mentorship afterwards. We've been tracking engagement and follow-up care, which has been very, very high. And so we believe that this investment can allow us to carry that experiment from a region-wide resource to a statewide resource. So I really encourage you to be able to make this investment. And what we've seen is huge gains in reducing healthcare costs, criminal justice involvement, and all that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Bates and Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Royce Boland. I'm a senior clinical director for Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare and the current president for Oregon Residential Provider Association. I want to thank you for this opportunity to talk to you today about the addictions and mental health budget. As you've heard through the various testimonies and we'll hear today, the need for greater investments into addictions and mental health system is tremendous. At Cascadia, we provide services to those who suffer from severe and persistent mental health issues, as well as those who suffer from substance abuse issues. And often, and this is important, these two clinically recognized conditions appear in the same person. This is why I want to express my support for Senator Courtney's mental health package, which focuses both on mental health and addictions. This package represents a longer-term investment towards improving the health and well-being of all Oregonians. We also offer our support and welcome our involvement in any potential changes with regard to transforming the mental health system. We are invested in moving the dial towards improved outcomes in mental health, addictions, and the overall health of all Oregonians. We want to make sure that any changes we make, whether they are at the state or local levels, or within the delivery system, keeps the client at the forefront of the conversation. Client involvement is paramount to our success. just to kind of speed this up, I'll skip to the next one. The data actually supports that people who have physical issues and are compounded with addictions and mental health issues cost the system significantly more. For example, somebody with diabetes who have a co-occurring mental health and addiction issue costs the system $36,730 annually compared to somebody who doesn't have a co-occurring illness and has diabetes. So that's a 287% increase. Based on the documented evidence, and there's a lot of evidence out there, and my experience as a provider of mental health services over the 20 years, I believe we can move forward with improving the lives of Oregonians through early intervention and promotion of mental health. This funding package is a great start in this direction. And through continued integration of physical and behavioral health, we will continue to improve the well-being of everyone. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Bates and Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Marie Wacker. I am the CEO of DePaul Treatment Centers. We provide co-occurring mental health and substance abuse treatment to about 2,400 people annually. We serve 75% of our clients are members of the Oregon Health Plan. My goal here today is to ask you for your help in elevating and addressing the significant problem the state faces with addictions treatment and recovery services. For too long, our state has relegated addictions to the back of the line. The costs of our neglect increase in nearly every other area in the state budget, including the criminal justice system, the education system, the child welfare system, and indeed most acutely, our healthcare system. We need your help to make addictions funding a top priority for this state. As Senator Bates mentioned last week, we need to turn the funding scheme upside down. Invest less in institutional care and far more in addictions and mental health. The current investment in addictions through CCOs doesn't even get close to covering our expenses. In that vein, I want to express strong support for Senator Courtney's mental health package. In that package, he has prioritized a large amount of funding, $20 million, towards addiction treatment, recovery, and prevention. This would be a huge step in bringing addictions from the back of the line. In addition, we need your help to encourage our CCOs to allocate a greater portion of the capitated rate towards addictions. At the risk of offending my physical health care friends, The intent of the CCOs was to shift the dollars from physical health to behavioral health. This simply is not happening fast enough, and the funding has been at very low levels. With inadequate resources from CCOs, together with the cost study AMH conducted last year that revealed our state residential rates are half of what it takes to cover our costs, we hope this will encourage you to realign the budget to prioritize addictions in the AMH OHA budget. Thank you for this opportunity to provide my comments, and I would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you for being here.
Request. Right now, we're going to new rate setting at OHA. Our rate settings were set at 1% and sometimes 2% lower than the last year, the 2014 year. I believe those rates are based on not what's actually sound, but past history. I think we're wrong. I think we need to raise those rates up. We're having a discussion with CMS about that. And I'd like to have you contact Lynn Saxton and OHA and tell them what you're doing is wrong. We're not having enough money for AMH, and that should be built into those new rates. The rates should not be going down. They should be going up, not high. Our agreement was 3.5% inflation. They actually cut rates 1% from 2014 to 2015. It's going to decimate programs like yours. Please make your voice heard. Those conversations are going on right as we speak. Have your CCOs step up and say, those rates are based on assumptions that are absolutely wrong.
I will absolutely do that, Senator Bates.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Cheryl, Carla, and David.
after that, so you can be preparing, will be Patrick, Kristen, and Stacy. And while most of you are still in the audience, I wanted to make a short statement, and I'd like my co-chair to follow up if he would like to. Your stories, your information, and your appeal will not fall on deaf ears. But I also want you to realize we can't necessarily satisfy 100% of all the requests that are coming in. The budget starts out with a significant, serious, very large hole in it, and we will be struggling. We will be very likely having to reduce some existing parts of the budget. I don't want to identify them as programs or services yet, but we'll be looking at the existing budget because we have a hole in that budget of over $100 million. But still, it's important to hear your messages about where to place the emphasis and where the priorities should be to do the most with what we do have. So we appreciate your being here, and we will do our darndest. Senator Bates.
Ditto.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Bates and Nathanson, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs, and I'm here to express our support for the Addictions and Mental Health and MAP budgets and also Senate President Courtney's new investment proposal. We've worked really hard with our agency, state agency partners, AMH, and our CCOs to initiate or enhance a number of evidence-based programs throughout the last biennium. And I'm constantly amazed at how community mental health programs are so masterful at knitting together funding to stand up or sustain their programs. It truly is amazing. I've had the benefit of sitting in all of the budget hearings over the past week or so, and I have a few observations which I've detailed in my written testimony. Here I'm only going to mention the topics to give more of my time to my colleagues here who have traveled far. So the observations I had were we need multi-payer agreements so that the state and county general funds and SAMHSA block grants aren't left to fill the gaps in the system. We need to invest in public safety mental health system partnerships. This is substantiated by the US DOJ directives. We need to invest in our behavioral health workforce. And fourth, we do support the statewide system mapping project and gap analysis. I would point you to the good work that Dale Jarvis did, just finished recently with the state of Washington, that we could use that to guide our way. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Please start.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Bates and Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Carla McCafferty. I'm the Executive Director for Options for Southern Oregon. We are the community mental health program for Josephine County. And we are also the behavioral health partner for both AllCare CCO and Primary Health CCO. My testimony today is to highlight some of the progress that we as a community mental health program in partnership with our CCOs and AMH and multiple public and private partners have made. Options for Southern Oregon operates the Oregon Supported Employment Center for Excellence. I believe that this is a supported employment was referenced last week. Representative Stark spoke to an individual who I believe received supported employment services through our organization. The statewide Center for Excellence's outcome data shows that statewide for the fourth quarter of 2014, 1,320 individuals with mental illness received individual placement and support services for competitive employment, and 499 of them, 38%, were working in the quarter. 220 of these were new job starts for participants. In our rural county of Josephine, 87 individuals with mental illness received supported employment the same quarter, and in partnership with our business community, 47% of them were employed in competitive jobs, 25 as new job starts. This is with an unemployment rate of 9.3 in our county. Funding through AMH and conjunction with OHP dollars and our school partnerships, has allowed us to have mental health therapists and skills trainers in every public school and alternative school in our community for years. In the last 18 months, we placed mental health therapists in all 17 Head Start programs in our community. We credit this and other innovative family approaches, which are funded through AMH, OYA, child welfare, school districts, the Youth Development Council, and private donor foundations, with our low child hospitalization rate and residential rate. Our rate for hospitalization of children in our county is in the single digits for both CCO programs for our children with mental health issues. Josephine County, I'm way done, so I can finish. So, one last quick mental health court. We've been doing mental health court for 8 years. That started with a grant, and now it's resourced purely through collaborative efforts for criminal justice, corrections, et cetera, and most recently our CCOs. And I can tell you, for a sample group of 21 individuals, 1 year prior to entry into mental health court, they had 605 contacts with police. 1 year after, we were down to 76 for that 21. So these are just examples of the collaborative efforts that are happening in our community, and we're not the only community in the state that's doing this. So
thanks for sharing that good news with us.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Chair Bates, and the committee. I'm glad to be here. My name is David Giels. I'm the Behavioral Health Director for Coos Health and Wellness, which is the community mental health program in Coos County. Rather than read the statements, I want to just give you some information. I mean, many CMHPs, including ours, have been integrated with the CCOs really from day one and prior to day one. We were integrally involved in developing the RFP for our community. We're integrated in much of the operation of Western Oregon Advanced Health. We from the initial, a lot of the community partners recognized that the CCOs were a vehicle to do what we'd all planned and wanted to do, which is, and all of us sort of got on board very early on in Coos County, to have the leverage of the medical community and bring that to fore with the efforts for mental health, addictions, seniors and people with disabilities, child welfare, law enforcement, all the partners. And really the strength of the CMHPs is we brought these strong partnerships to the CCOs. We also brought a level of expertise around mental health care. Outpatient care is available in the community. Specialized mental health care is not. CMHPs are a vital part of the process. Supported housing, supported employment, mental health courts, all of these things. Nobody's going to do these things if CMHPs are not in charge. The CCO recognized ours wanted, and they wanted that. And so that's really the mission that we've taken forward. And we're really excited about it. And the CMHPs also has some additional responsibilities for non-Medicaid populations and things like that, community supports. That's another part of what we bring to the table. I'd also like to say a brief thing about integration. This has become such a buzzword lately over the last, and I have to say that I cringe a little bit, because true integration is not going to be happening overnight. We have thrust people together, we thrust systems together, but the real integration process is going to take a long time, and it requires a clear, consistent vision over time to really maintain it. If we lose focus, any chance to integrate is not going to happen. This is a cultural change. You know, I was going to say, personally, I became a part of I became a stepdad and a stepfather, I don't know, 14 years ago. And I had this idea that somehow this would happen overnight, that we would somehow become a family. And maybe I thought maybe a year or two. Well, 5, 10, now almost 15 years later, you know, now I can sort of see the fruits of it, of it happening. So I think we need to consider that that's probably the same thing with integration. You know, the mind and body were separated centuries ago, and to put them back together is not going to be happening here in any quick fashion. So, you know, you guys have started, and we have started the process about trying to get everybody in the same room, but to get us thinking in the same way is going to take time. So thank you.
Chair.
Thank you.
May I ask one question? I know Carla drove 200 miles to be here, and I'd love to ask her one question.
Oops.
Thank you, Chair. Carla, I know, you know, Senator Bates mentioned sometimes sending people to Josephine County, and we've heard a couple very, and by the way, it's good to see someone from home, so thank you
for coming.
Thank you, too. We've heard a couple very heartbreaking stories about ER visits here, and from what I've seen, Options of Southern Oregon is one of the locations that actually handles that very well, and I have some intimate knowledge with that process. Can you share with us briefly, if someone comes into the ER and they are intoxicated but a danger to self or others, can you give us a quick of what is the process in Josephine County with that?
Well, for Josephine County, if they come in and they have and they're intoxicated, they go to the ER. The emergency room, the hospital runs toxicology tests on those individuals. And usually there's a period of time in which that individual is held so they can actually be appropriately evaluated. And that may happen in the hospital. They also may be diverted to our crisis resolution center if they don't need a medically supervised detoxification. And we're not a detox center, so we're not licensed to do that. But it really depends on the individual case. And then we'll wait for that those drugs to clear out of that person's system and do an evaluation at that point as to what's happening psychiatrically with that person. So does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. And as we're leaving, Options is an outstanding program in the state. They don't send these people home. And I literally have people, nothing personal, Carly, you get mad at me. Keep going. Leave.
Okay.
Don't hear this. I actually send people to have them move to Josephine County to get good mental health because they can't get it in Jackson County. Well, that's pretty sad.
Mentor.
Yes.
Sheriff Garrett's from Washington County, and he has done some pretty phenomenal stuff with mental health up there as well. I mean, if you've been tracking what he, so, I mean, you've already heard from one sheriff, Sheriff Myers here, so this is kind of interesting to listen to as well.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Good morning.
Pardon me.
Yes.
The next panel, so you can be preparing, will be Lauren Kahn, Martin Rafferty, and Hannah. So you can be getting ready. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Chair Bates, committee members. My name is Pat Garrett. I'm the sheriff at Washington County. And in Washington County, we also enjoy a wonderful collaborative relationship between the justice system leaders down to the line level and also with our county mental health. And I want to just illustrate a few of the programs that we've been able to see some results in regarding meeting the treating our mental health, mentally ill folks in our community that rely on community mental health program dollars. First is our mental health response team, pairing of a mental health clinician with a deputy in the field. We're able to do it from noon till about 10 p.m., 7 days a week. Last year, they intervened in over 1,100 crisis episodes, and that involved contacts with over 3,200 folks who were suffering from some mental illness to some degree, working hard to assist them to connect them to treatment in the community. We have many examples where I am absolutely convinced that we have avoided very significant use of force events because of the good work that this clinician and this deputy are doing together in the field. Another program that illustrates the support that County Mental Health provides the Sheriff's Office is the recent jail diversion program that was initiated by CMHP. This program uses data and a care coordinator approach to target those repeat offenders who are in and out of our jail, and their conduct is really driven by their severe mental illness. In the past 9 months, we were able to focus these efforts on just 12 individuals who were really mentally ill and previously in and out of our jail continuously. And in that 9-month time, we saw through this diversion program a 30% drop in jail bed days used by this group and a 50% decrease in bookings. While these numbers are preliminary, they represent about 40 total fewer bookings and over 500 fewer bed days for just a group of 12 people. These are safety net programs that really belong at the county level to kind of leverage the local ground knowledge and the expertise in the community. The bottom line for me is programs like the mental health response team increase the chances that we can avoid incidents where a mentally ill person is suffering a psychotic episode, where sometimes they get armed and they get threatening, and it forces a police officer or deputy to make a very, very tough split-second decision that can have tragic and long-term consequences for everybody. We do not want that. And that program really helps us avoid those at a much better rate. And our jail diversion program lowers the rate at where we warehouse mentally ill persons in jail. We do that too much today. I think we can all agree. It better manages our litigation risk, and it's simply the right thing to do for people in our community. So thank you for your service to Oregon and for your support.
Thank you. Who's next?
Greetings, Co-Chair Bates and Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Burke. I'm the Community Mental Health Program Director for Washington County. And so I'm here to advocate for continued funding of the Community Mental Health Program. And I'm very pleased to follow the testimony of the sheriff. Our partnership with the sheriff's office has allowed me to have access to individuals that previously I just simply haven't been able to reach. Interestingly, when we started the MHRT program, I expected that our community mental health crisis teams, that the numbers would go down because we had this other team that was often responding to many of the same community members. In fact, our numbers went up for both teams. So this really illustrated to me that there were many people out there that we're simply not reaching, and that we need kind of a multi-tiered approach at really trying to meet the needs of our individuals. So when I was thinking about how to illustrate this, I decided to talk about my experience last week. There were three events that really stand out to me from my last week's work. On Tuesday, we discovered a suicide note that was sent to a member of my staff from an inmate in the jail, and it was basically a goodbye note. We were able to intervene. I have a jail liaison person, mental health person, who's in the jail, who was able to put that individual on suicide watch, and he will now work to connect her to treatment as she's released from the jail. So we felt that that was a very successful intervention. On Friday, the general county email, we received a note from a community member who said that they were suicidal and didn't have a phone. Within minutes, we were able to research what her address was, and we sent our mental health crisis response team out to that individual. She was later transported to the hospital for acute care, and so we were able to help her out. These two incidents really illustrate that we need a crisis response system that is broad and really reaches people in multi ways. We just simply can't rely on people to call and reach out to a crisis line. There's other ways that we need to reach people. As gratifying as it was to know that we reached those two people and helped them, I was also reminded that we have work to do. On Saturday, a 10-year-old committed suicide in Washington County. We were not able to reach that person. We didn't know that they were suicidal. So I urge you to continue to fund the Community Mental Health Program so that we can continue to expand our reach to people who need the help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Chair Nathanson, Bates, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stacey Michelson with the Association of Oregon Counties. Really pleased to be able to go after Kristen and the good sheriff here. AOC is here in support of the AMH budget, and particularly Senator Courtney's requested investments in mental health services. We've been working on this for, well, the last year or so. We started out actually from the public safety side. We had public safety summits around the state, went to our folks in the county jails and said, you know, what do you need? What are the biggest issues you're facing? And the number one thing we heard statewide was our jails are filled with individuals with mental health issues and addictions issues. Right, we're not providing them the adequate services here. We're not getting the right folks in. We're not getting these folks into the right beds. How do we solve this problem? So we started having some conversations and looking at some of the great work that was being done, or is being done rather, in Marion County, in Washington County. Particularly the mobile crisis teams have been a huge benefit. Lane County's got some great work going on with their sobering stations. I think we're seeing some really excellent examples of where counties are on the ground and can be really nimble and innovative in how they're intervening in some of these areas and providing appropriate supports. And as has been mentioned, a number of our counties aren't quite there and are struggling with some of their resources, and that's where the requested investments from Senator Courtney, I think, would be a huge help in ensuring that these services are available statewide, and that regardless of whether you're in Washington County or Lake County or Umatilla County, you're able to get access to these services when needed. So in any way that we can be helpful in supporting Senator Courtney's request and having conversations about how those funds actually flow, what that looks like on the ground, how counties can partner in that, we are supportive of that and want to be at the table. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have
I think, 8 people left to testify, so if you do the math, you can see we're not going to finish on time. Senator.
Really quickly, Sheriff Garrett, it's lovely to see you here. Sheriff Garrett's group covers the vast majority of my district, and I had the opportunity to do a ride-along with one of your deputies some months ago, and I want to point out that there, yes, absolutely we need these interventions for people who are acutely psychotic or intoxicated and dangerous to themselves and others. There's another side to it. I was out with your deputy, and it was 11:30 at night, and we got a call about a woman who was possibly suicidal. We were able to track her down and find her. She was at a friend's house, and it was really clear to your experienced deputy and to me as a physician, this woman wasn't actually suicidal. But we didn't have a choice. We had to transport her to the St. V's Emergency Department, and that meant that there was a $1,000 emergency department bill. There was your officer off of the streets for an hour or more, talking her into going to the hospital, getting her to the hospital, dropping her off, and going and doing all the paperwork he had to do, all for something that wasn't actually going to help this woman. So I think we have to think, as we think about this, not only about the folks that you describe who are truly at huge risk themselves, but also the people who are calling out in a different kind of way and need a different kind of help. And so having people available, not just from noon to 10, which is fabulous, don't get me wrong, I'm not looking at negating the importance of that, but really around the clock, because we all know that that middle of the night time is so tough for people. So as we start to expand these innovative programs, I hope we look to programs where we're not necessarily putting people into traditional acute care settings and taking officers off the street when we're dealing with people who need very different kinds of care. So thank you to Sheriff Garrett and to all the folks from Washington County for working together, and I look forward to working with you to expand the kinds of services we can offer.
Thank you.
So as Lauren, Martin, and Hannah come up, Megan and Rich are next. Please begin.
Chairs Nathanson and Bates, members of the committee, my name is Lauren Kahn. I work with Youth Move Oregon as the regional director for our Jackson County programming, which includes the youth hub called the Medford Drop. So I'm here today to talk to you just a little bit about what we do at the Drop and how it's making a difference in the lives of young people. So we have our drop-in hours from 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, where youth can come in. We provide one-on-one peer support services where the youth can meet with peer support specialists who have lived experience in mental health, addiction and recovery, the juvenile justice system, foster care, etc. And then we also offer a leadership program for the youth and classes that teach coding skills for websites and apps. My own experience in my teenage years, I had developed severe depression and anxiety. I was harming myself and attempting suicide, and I spent a lot of time in hospitals and residential programs. We're talking, I think, 20 hospitalizations between 16 and 18, as well as more than 5 residential placements. So obviously I was going in and out of programs that weren't working, weren't serving me well, because I was ending up right back in other programs. And what I know from my own experience is that having something like the Youth Hub available, having peer support available to me, I believe would have made a big difference in my own journey. Probably avoided a number of the hospitalizations and placements, kept me in the community. So that's why I really believe in what we're doing, and I get to see every day the difference it makes in the lives of the young people we're working with. I'll just take the time to tell one story about one of the youth we've worked with. In December, we had a staff from one of the local schools bring a 17-year-old into us who had been found to be cutting at the school. And he's definitely a system where a youth won't access traditional services, won't go unless someone takes him. He was brought to the center by a school staff, and it took a while for us to build trust with him, but after we did, he's now receiving regular peer support services with us and is doing a lot better than he was when he started with us. So thank you for giving me the time to speak with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee. My name is Martin Rafferty. I'm here with Youth Move Oregon and here to talk about the youth hubs. Sometimes you are the Rebel Alliance, and sometimes you're the Imperial Fleet. And I'm really excited about the new Star Wars movies coming out. But you know, with the mention of the suicide in Sherwood just a few days ago, the Philomath suicides, the suicide pack in Albany, there is a clear problem in Oregon with youth and suicide. And I almost cried when I was watching on the news the response from the media and from the schools about what to do about these middle schoolers, offering them a way to call in, a hotline, and access to professionals. It's the same stigma that causes some of these episodes to occur. People stepping out of the norm and being identified as being mentally ill. In middle school, you do whatever you can to look the same and to look sane. And stigma has not broken through. You know, there is a place for all of these studies and all of these exercises, and our colleges and universities are not training your professionals who are on the front line with the best. So we were called into Reynolds High School after the school shooting. We were able to get 220 students to come back in the summer, and we brought them back with virtual reality, right? We brought them back with things that had nothing to do with the shooting, but we did have peer support staff there and the professionals there, because we believe in professional services, right? But there has to be a bridge to fight that stigma to get them there. Youth Move Oregon can reach system-weary youth, and AMH makes it possible with these hubs to reach a lot more of those system-weary youth. So thank you so much, and let's be the Rebel Alliance.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Hannah, and I'm a survivor of psychosis and schizophrenia. When ESA first came into my life, I was broken and was completely bewildered as to what was going on. They have helped me cope with my diagnosis by garnering me up again to step back into the world. After attending the ESA conference 2 years ago, I realized I could overcome my symptoms and self-stigma because I was able to see other young adults that had been through the same symptoms as myself and were advocating functioning normal, which gave me the hope I needed to keep going. Before my diagnosis, I have been doing advocacy through the Salem Chamber of Commerce Youth Leadership Program, FBLA, and student government, and had thought my days of articulation and persuasion were over. But after seeing the ESA Young Adult Leadership Council at that conference, I realized my qualms over speaking out loud were holding me back, and it gave me hope that I could do it again someday. Today, I'm currently part of 3 ESA councils as well as back in school. If it wasn't for my family and ESA support, I wouldn't be 1 year symptom-free or have the will or strength to keep pursuing life the way I am today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Megan and Rich.
And Madam Chair, I might add that Rich is a constituent.
Then we should have left.
Okay, so.
All right. Co-Chair Bates and Nathanson and committee members. My name is Rich Blum. I'm the Vice President of Business Development and Provider Relations for Trillium Family Services. Trillium Family Services is the largest provider of mental health and behavioral health care services in the state of Oregon. We're the only organization that has a full range of services, from prevention and outpatient to secure inpatient services or the old state hospital level of care for children and adolescents. We have hubs in Southeast Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. we have the state's only secure inpatient programs for children. The children's unit is in Corvallis, or in Portland, and the adolescent units are down in Corvallis. Secure inpatient programs, or the old state hospital level of care, are the safety net for youth with the highest and most challenging mental health challenges. We've been operating those programs since 2002 on the children and 2005 for the adolescents, using modified buildings.
these facilities are now becoming inadequate and worn out, and we're becoming concerned that they could be becoming unsafe for both the adolescents and children that we're treating and our staff. Since the Trillium has taken over the operation of these programs, we have made some changes compared to how the state hospital is operating. We've eliminated and have never used mechanical and chemical restraints, which was a common occurrence when in the state hospital. And we've reduced the average length of stay by about 30%. Over the course of the decade for the Secure Adolescent Inpatient Program, we have saved the state in the aggregate roughly $70 million. The proposal that we have and the need that exists is to replace the three buildings that are now worn out. The cost to do that is $24 million, and we're doing it in three phases. The first phase is currently underway with the building in Corvallis scheduled to open roughly October 1st. That phase comes in at $6 million. The state had provided $2.5 million of that six. Phase two, which is what we're here to talk about, would be the second 16-bed building with supports offices, and that comes in at $8.8 million. The proposal that we have is that the funding for this is done on a 50-50 public-private partnership. The state covering half of the $8.8 million cost with tobacco tax revenues. Tobacco tax revenues are designated for mental health infrastructure needs. This partnership has been good. We have saved a lot of money. And the state is mandated to provide these levels, this level of care for the few kids and adolescents that need that. We take note that over the last few years, the state has paid for over $400 million in state hospital level care for adults, and we're asking for that the same consideration be done to get upgraded facilities for the children. And really what we're asking for is part of the $70 million that we have saved over the last decade to be reinvested in upgrading these facilities so that we can continue to save the people of Oregon more money. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have now reached the limit of our public hearing time. I apologize if any of the committee members need to leave. I suppose you'll need to do that. I can stay for a couple more minutes. Senator Bates may be able to remain for a few minutes. Is there any additional information you have from Trillium?
Yes. May I please share?
Thank you.
Thanks. I apologize for leaving.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
I apologize, Madam Chair. I'm going to be leaving.
Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Megan Storrs. I'm 21 years old, and now more than ever, I celebrate my life. But I wouldn't have been here to experience these happiest years of my life without the treatment I received from Trillium. I was born into a terribly abusive family. Several of my family members were arrested with charges of sex abuse, assault, and neglect towards me. And in turn, at age 14, I was placed into foster care where I bounced around in a total of 11 homes. Some of these families continued to abuse me. I felt no hope, love, or future. I began cutting and starving myself. I tried to kill myself on multiple occasions. The fact that I'm here today really is a miracle. To make matters worse in my head, the same lack of stability I experienced in home placements, I also experienced in hospitals and treatment centers. I began the first of many intense interventions at Sacred Heart Riverbend, where I spent 6 weeks with a feeding tube. I went to multiple day treatment and outpatient programs, St. Vincent Medical, Dornbecker Medical, Providence, Psych, the Johnson Unit. Finally, I ended up at the Children's Farm Home, where I spent a year and a half. I experienced a great amount of healing, and I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder, anorexia nervosa, and post-traumatic stress disorder. This is a similar story to many children just like me, who after many tries found stabilization at the Children's Farm Home. This is because of their dedicated and carefully selected staff crew, intense but encouraging treatment program, and their exemplified approach that every life was worth living. Life was safe, understanding, and consistent. I learned to love myself and live. If I was asked to name a complaint, it would be nothing of the quality of care given, program staff, or management, but the building concerns me. The condition is unacceptable for those being served, and skilled architects have addressed each of my complaints and have dedicated their work to creating a healing and safe environment at a cost which, in my opinion, which I think counts, cannot be denied. We're doing our part to raise funds, and I'm asking that you do yours. This isn't just any business. It's a large group of people who have based their business on selling the quality of life to people like me, to those who most deserve it. Let me remind you of where I came from, a terribly dark and hopeless beginning. Now I'm a healthy member of society working full-time. I am a sister, an aunt, a granddaughter, a niece, a friend, an employee, a taxpayer, and I'm a mom to a beautiful puppy. Let me tell you that I'm not alone in my passion for life. I'm here representing thousands of children who suffer from trauma and mental illness, both the recipients of quality care and the unfortunate who've not yet found peace and health. But they would tell you the same if they were here. We're intelligent, contributing, and successful members of society. Invest in us. We are young, and we can make a huge impact on this world. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. I'm sure glad you're here with us today to tell us that.
Thank you.
Okay, the next panel. We have Chris, Marie, and Daniel.
Linda Hammond said she might have a choice.
I do. I have to leave. I'm talking about it. Okay.
Co-chairs Nathanson and Bates, I'm Chris Bon, and members of the committee, I'm Chris Bon F. I'm with NAMI Oregon, just in from Representative Boone's district for this hearing in particular. So thank you for the little bit of extra time that you've allotted. I'm here to talk about housing. First off, I would like to echo support for Senator Courtney's mental health investment package. I mean, certainly the investments made in 2013 have paid dividends. Any additional investments we can make, our track record so far has been pretty good. Among those investments was some additional funding from the tobacco tax, $5 million of which went into a housing concept that got the blessing of this committee and will be coming before you in the form of House Bill 2825. Happy to report that the concept we came up with and the money that you allowed to be spent on that, that we termed a Housing Development Incentive Fund, worked. That $5 million investment turned into $24.5 million in new housing. We have two new respite programs, crisis respite, coming online. In addition, we have supported independent housing being developed in Coos, Curry, Jackson, Lane, and Marion counties. So in a very short order, we were able to do what we hoped, which was take state mental health funding and leverage that into permanent infrastructure. Our hope is that as we have these continued conversations around the tobacco tax and our additional investments in housing, that we roll up our investment in this fund, make this fund a permanent feature of Oregon's mental health system so that we can continue to leverage state dollars to build new permanent housing infrastructure for people living with mental illness and addictions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Nathan, Senator Bates, Representative Boone, Representative Olson. My name is Daniel Smith. I'm a clinical forensic psychologist. I work at the Oregon State Hospital. I've been there about 13 years now. I have been working in community mental health for over 30 years. I'd like to speak, I'm also a proud member of SEIU. I'd like to speak in favor of the Oregon State Hospital budget. We have been working, the union and the administration of the hospital, to improve patient safety and safety for the staff of the hospital. We've had some success in that. We're also seeing success in reducing overtime. We cannot look at mental health as either funding community or funding the state hospital. It must be a both and funding. We cannot neglect people in the community and not have a facility where they can be stabilized when needed. One place where you might want to consider looking to enlarge the pie is the amount of contracting that's taking place at the Oregon State Hospital. It's being done at every level, from groundskeeping all the way up to psychiatric staff coming in, both physicians, nurses, and so on. We believe that funding could be found there to reduce the amount of money being spent while not cutting services by hiring more employees. A very expensive contract for 1 year may be worthwhile as a cost-saving measure, but many of these contracts are being extended into 2, 3, 4, and 5 years. We believe that that creates a burden on the state that could be better relieved by hiring full-time employees for the hospital. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for extending the time so that we might, so that I might speak. Thank you.
Thank you for the information, for your testimony. To all of you, thank you for being here, and so many of you for staying to listen to your colleagues, your friends, friends you didn't know you had. We will take all of this information into consideration. Some of you stay tuned and hover around our offices or the halls and stay in contact with us either personally or through representatives of organizations that you belong to. For those of you who aren't familiar with this process, there's always ways to listen to us live online, indeed. For those of you who were sitting up here providing information or your stories, other people may have been listening to you live online because these are broadcast and available publicly. So stay in touch with us. We're adjourning for the day.